Hello and welcome to Show People. I'm Michael Grayman Parkhurst. This is again Show People on the 10th Voice. I am so incredibly happy to be joined by our 10th Voice producers today, Una and Fiona. How are you doing?
We're doing good, Michael.
Yes, we are. Thank you.
How about you?
Doing well. I think it's been a while since I've been in here, so I'm so happy to see the two of you.
Yeah.
They're renovating, so it looks different when you walk in our building.
Yes, the landlords are renovating, and the first time you come in and there isn't an extra door there to swipe yourself through, it's those people. Some people have been wandering around looking for the extra door.
To the elevator.
I hear they're going to put an arboretum in.
To make up for the tree that had to be cut down to enhance and enlarge the
fresh orange groves
car park.
And so forth.
That would be cool, especially if they turned it into a community garden.
True, absolutely. Wait, are you two traveling for the holidays?
Are you only traveling from my dining room to my lounge, probably.
Perfect.
And to the station next Saturday, because Christmas Day is our regular 10th Voice Saturday.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Wonderful. Oh my gosh. I am thrilled to have a returning guest today. The lovely Christine Colby Jakes is back in the studio with me. I think I chatted with her in July. I'll tell you a little about Christine. She is, after being a member of the Cincinnati Ballet, the Contemporary Dance Theater, and touring with Disney on Parade, Christine became a rockette at the Radio City Music Hall and then toured with Peter Allen. She debuted on Broadway as a member of the original cast of Bob Fosse's musical Dancin'. She was also an original cast member of Fosse's Broadway revival of Sweet Charity, appearing as one of the iconic Spender Girls, as well as the role of Ursula. She toured with the First National Company of Fosse. Some film and television credits include Alvin Ailey, Dance Theater Workshop Special on PBS, The Tonight Show, the movie A Chorus Line, and the original Annie, starring Carol Burnett. Until the pandemic of 2020, Christine was teaching Kansas City Ballet trainees the sublime and quirky work, and we'll get into that, of Bob Fosse. She just got back from New York working with director Wayne Cilento on the 2022 Broadway revival of Dancin'. Welcome to
Thank
Show
you.
People.
Thank
welcome
you.
Back, Christine.
Thank you. Hi, Una and Fiona.
Hi, Christine. It is so
good to be back here.
Oh, we had such a great time in July. How are you doing?
Good. I'm all charged from being in New York City and also relieved to be back in Kansas City because I think I got out just in the nick of time.
Just in time.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh. No, every day there seems to be news about another Broadway, off-Broadway, or touring show canceling performances.
Yes.
We just heard the Radio City Christmas Spectacular close their production early.
Yep, they had, what, 2 more weeks to go?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and some of the Broadway shows have closed for a couple nights because of all the people testing positive.
Yep. Hamilton, Hadestown, Moulin Rouge, Company,
right?
All of those are sort of announcing, you sort of see it on Playbill.
Yeah, and it seems almost impossible because we were, during our rehearsal period, we were tested twice a week.
Right.
After Thanksgiving, we were tested the day after that. We were off on Sunday, and then we were tested again on Monday. The good news is because of how they test, they're able to track where it came from. So they know like where to shut it down and who to ferret out and who to notify. And that's pretty amazing.
I didn't
amazing.
Know this,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But still, the cases are kind of increasing, and I think maybe that's Omicron strain. I don't know,
it's
but it's
possible.
Just with all the testing that's going on, it's pretty amazing that it's still happening.
It's a lot happening. Yeah, and that's so different. Again, you just came back. When did you, like, last week?
Last week. A week ago today.
And it was kind of even different a week ago.
Yeah.
When
it
you
wasn't
were there.
As serious, but right. I mean, as soon as you hear another strain, you just have to go, okay, it's going to go across, it's going to sweep across the country. That's just how viruses work.
Right, right.
So you do your best to protect yourself against it. You know, we were asked to kind of be careful of where we went outside of rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, be mindful of that. But it certainly made me much more comfortable going into the rehearsal studio knowing, and we would know like within 30 minutes, 15 or 30 minutes, because it was one of those rapid antigen tests.
Yes, absolutely, right.
I felt very safe and comfortable going up into rehearsal. And we had a COVID monitor in the rehearsal room and outside the rehearsal room. So when you got off the elevator, you had to switch out your mask. They would allow no cloth masks. Had to be a KN95 or an N95.
N95. Makes it a kid's N95 mask.
Okay.
Got it.
I think we got the KN95.
If you're tiny, that will often fit
that's
better.
Yeah. And they had them. They provided it for us.
Maybe I'm wrong.
But they would allow no cloth.
Wait, so you got off the elevator and they had to put you in a new mask to get into the actual space.
Yeah, and first you had to sign in and get a QR code and prove that you had the test done and get a QR code to be invited into the rehearsal building. And then you had to have a little printed out sticker to show to prove that you did all that. And then as soon as you got off the elevator, there was somebody there to go, not yet, come change your mask out. And then the monitor in the room would make sure that all the stage managers and the staff and the musicians were wearing masks. And if you were a dancer, at certain points you could take it off because the dancing was just too aerobic to be in a mask. But you'd be surprised how many dancers put the masks on voluntarily when they weren't doing anything that was high aerobic. And if you came out of the rehearsal room just to cross the hall and go to the bathroom, the monitor would go, you forgot your mask.
Wow.
You'd have to go back in and get it.
Yeah.
They were so meticulous. And it was annoying, but it certainly made us all feel much more comfortable. And I think it got us out of nobody tested positive except the one person who went to do a show outside of ours.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Now, was everybody vaccinated as well as the booster?
Yes,
you had to have the booster as well.
Or at least I'm not sure about the booster, but I know you had to have two doses of Pfizer, Moderna, or one dose of Johnson & Johnson to be able to be in the cast.
Wow.
Strange times.
How is it coming home?
I felt extremely comfortable because of what I did a little research, and on the airplanes, all of the air in the cabin gets changed over like every 2 minutes.
Okay.
That's probably fresher than you'd get anywhere.
Yeah.
In an office building, a doctor's office, you know, anything. So, and people are just very compliant. And I'd say most people, even on the streets of New York, were wearing masks.
That's what you said.
Yeah. I was surprised. Yeah. More so than last summer. And to get into a restaurant in New York, you had to show your vaccination card. To get into a show, you had to show your vaccination card, your driver's license. And then you had to go through security and they check your bags. It's like, you know, pretty soon, what are they going to do next?
How had the energy changed in New York since you were there last summer? Did you notice anything significant?
Yes, it was kind of strange last summer. The streets weren't as empty as I thought they'd be. There was garbage everywhere. There were so many businesses that had gone out of business. This trip, you could see the businesses that had been papered over. The windows were papered over. Garbage was just all on the sidewalk in front of these restaurants and businesses that closed. Those were cleaned up. They were inside renovating, like preparing to reopen or open as something else. Many more people on the streets. A lot of kids, babies in strollers, and kids and parents. It was just packed. It was really like it was over.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And restaurants were sometimes crowded, sometimes not. I guess before theater time, of course, they'd be crowded. But I think because you had to show proof of vaccination, not as many people were eating inside the restaurant. And a lot more people were eating outside where they just set up those makeshift, either put out tables right outside on the sidewalk or the what they call cabins. In the street. And you'd be surprised. It was pretty cold up there, and there were still people sitting outside.
It must have been different, though, because so many businesses on 8th Avenue are dependent on theater being
and some of, in like business. Some of those restaurants were closed.
Okay.
Orso's, John's Pizza, Joe Allen's. They're all open again, limited hours.
Yeah.
But I went in to get something to go at the John's Pizza, and it was packed.
Right.
But everybody had masks.
Yep.
Um, Yeah, so it was all coming back. I mean, their traffic was back, and people were just, you know, filling the streets and in lines down the theaters, and it was kind of nice to see, although it was kind of a contradiction just before I left to keep hearing about Omicron, it's doubling every day, and then you go outside in the street, and people are just crammed together doing life as normal up there. So I kind of feel like we're, even since being back, it's kind of dual messages. Yeah. I see commercials for amusement parks. Come back. We're back. It's all, everything's normal. Come see that. And then we hear about the numbers doubling and the hospitals being overwhelmed. And it's just a kind of a,
I could have predicted this with winter coming on, too.
And yeah, and with Thanksgiving holiday and people getting together.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be something we just have to live with for a while.
I think so, too. Yeah. Well, we're so happy to have you back with us.
Thanks.
Last time we spoke with you, you had just come back from doing a workshop of dance, and now, of course, you've returned from rehearsing dancing and continuing. So a little bit of background. Dancing opened on Broadway, the original opened on Broadway at the Broadhurst Theater in 1978, of course, directed and choreographed by Bob Fosse. Can you talk to us about the original idea behind dancing?
Bob loves dancers and has a great admiration for ballet dancers. And I think because they carry the grace and the elegance that is really a hallmark of his work. And when you see his work, it may seem sensual, but and it is. But I think it's because of what you hold in your mind, the imagery that you hold in your mind, and that you do it with great elegance and kind of a lack of awareness of what you're doing. So in other words, you're not telegraphing the sensuality.
Right.
So sometimes people seem to see the sensuality and turn it into sexuality and just, you know, go for the full
overt
range of motion, which is not him. His original intent was to showcase dancers and to showcase the dances that were simmering in his head and get them out, you know, for an audience to see and be able to feature dancers. Because so often dance is kind of like an aside in a Broadway show.
Right.
In a play, it's maybe non-existent. Of course, that's the nature of a play. So I think he really wanted to feature dance.
And some new new pieces, like, you know, Mr. Bojangles came from there, and Dancing Man, and
Well, Dancing Man was inspired by Fred Astaire.
Right.
He did
right.
that in silk stockings, the movie.
Oh,
and he wore the white suit with the powder blue shirt and the straw hat with the powder blue band and everything. Mr. Fosse did it with the white suits and a pink shirt and pink and maroon tie and band and everything. But that was really his homage to Fred Astaire.
To Fred Astaire.
Yeah. He just adored him. And Bill Bojangles Robinson. Those two people
Robinson.
He grew up actually watching. He'd skip school with his partner, whose first name... Charles Grassley, I think.
Okay.
Was his partner when they were kids.
Okay.
And they would skip school and go and watch in these vaudevillian theaters Bojangles and Paul Draper and Fred Astaire, you know, when he just, you know, really had an admiration for him. So that was his homage.
Homage to it.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. And then in something like Perk 4 of Arez, he could use that to display his virtuosity or explore the things that maybe he couldn't do anymore because now he was like middle-aged.
Said he was getting ready, he was turning 50. It was
something
around
like that.
The nearest
50th
birthday. Yeah. We're going to come back. We're going to continue to talk about this right after our break here with Christine Colby-Jakes. Hello and welcome back to Show People. My guest today is the lovely Christine Colby-Jakes. We've been talking about, well, you know, we're going to talk about her career. We've talked about everything. We spoke again with her in July here on Show People. So we're having a nice follow-up interview. In a 1978 New York Times interview with Bob Fosse, this was during the Dance in Boston tryout, Bob Fosse is quoted as saying, "This show is about the sheer joy of dancing," which is what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Did you feel that at the time?
Oh,
that
no.
That's what this was? Tell me.
No, because it was so hard.
Right.
You know, this is the wonderful thing about other, you know, a typical musical is you've got scene, 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 then the big dance number. And then scene, scene, and you might be in a crowd scene, or you might have a walk-on, but you have a chance to rest. We nicknamed dancing back then Sweat and Change, because that's all you did. And you were underdressed, so you had like a costume over a costume, because there was no time to change. You just had time to take the one off, and you'd have the other one underneath it. It was hard, and you just were so focused on what you were doing. And during the previews, Fosse could change anything he wanted, and he did. He took somebody out of a number and put somebody else in, which meant she had to learn a number really fast, like overnight. He took out lines and put in different ones, so you had to really remember not to say the line you'd been saying for the past 8 weeks. You know, he could change anything until opening night on Broadway. So... and there was a lot of drama going on, and that would kind of take your attention off the joy of dancing for a while. People were just heaving and bent over and trying to catch their breath. It was just... and that is Bob's choreography. You have to be so fit. You have to know where to rest without appearing to rest. You have to know how to pace yourself, but still hit the things with life and energy, and where to make things soft and more lyrical. And that takes a lot of concentration. So until you kind of really get that under your belt, we probably didn't feel that joy.
That sheer, that
until
sheer
like,
joy.
You know, maybe a month after opening.
Right.
And you have all the tension of knowing critics are going to come every day of previews and the opening night and crowds and reviews and critics and stuff. Once that all dies down, then you can kind of, everything kind of calms down and you can actually enjoy what you're doing. And then you would have performances where you are so into them, you don't even realize the effort you're putting out. And a whole show goes by and you're like, whew, I feel great. I feel like I could do that all over again. You're just riding on a cloud. I don't know how it happens.
To a different place, yeah.
And you try to recreate that every night.
Right.
It doesn't always happen. You just sometimes, it's just you kind of click into a zone between you and your body and the audience and their reactions, because audience reaction feeds you. And then that, they feed from that. You know, it's always a give and take in theater. Plays, musical theaters, piano concerts, you know, opera, orchestras. It's a give and take between audience and musician and artist.
It can't be theater without it.
No.
That's been some of the hardest thing about going through the pandemic was, you know, people were trying to exist as artists, and so they moved to
video, online
to
and
online,
Zoom
all that
and
stuff. And it misses that. That's
it
not
helps.
The theater. It helps.
It helps, but you
right.
there's that disconnect of emotion or whatever radiates out of our bodies. You might call it Curlian. Curlian was a scientist that figured out how to photograph the energy coming off the body. And you can actually see from a leaf or a human hand this aura that surrounds us. And it's that energy that we sense from people when we are together with them. And I read some research that said this is what happens. Like, have you ever met somebody and right away you don't like them? Or right away you feel really comfortable? It's the auras either mixing
connecting
or not.
Connecting or not. Yes.
Yeah.
The energy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think that's what theater provides people, not just the visual razzle-dazzle and the beautiful melodies of a song and a voice and the visual excitement of a dance routine, but it's the energy that you're feeling from the cast, but what you're feeling from the people next to you and around
next to you.
You
in the audience.
Yeah.
Yes. That's why it's so special.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was some. There would be some days during the previews where Bob Fosse would be putting like four numbers in during previews, right?
And, oh, he could if he wanted.
Just
yeah.
Changing, right.
There was a number that he did that was strictly a skit, and it really wasn't working because it was dance number, dance number, dance number, and then skit. Only dialogue, and that was it. And it just kind of brought the show to a standstill. He fiddled with it for a while, and it wasn't working, so he cut it.
Mm.
Wayne Cilento is doing something with that.
Mm.
And it's pretty fantastic.
We should tell our audience, we talked in July about this.
Yeah.
You know, Wayne Cilento was in the original Dancing Company with you.
Yes.
He's gone on to choreograph, you know.
Many Broadway shows.
Wicked, The Who's Tommy, and many, many things. And
Tony Award winner.
Yeah, Tony Award winner. And he approached you to work on this. Why revive it? What is that? Why revive this?
I've been asked that. From Wayne's point of view, he wants to revive it to bring Fosse back to Broadway and demonstrate his relevance and why he's still relevant. Because you won't always go and seek out a movie like, you know, Cabaret, Star 80, Lenny, which were non-musical movies.
Right. Oh, right.
And it's just, you don't want the material to be lost, and you don't want the material to be lost in its true form. And he wanted to bring that show back, I guess because he felt he could do something with that skit that was cut. And he wanted to do it the way Bob Fosse intended. And by that I mean the quality of the performing, of the quality that the artist is performing it. That's not good English. But there is a way of dancing that is just kind of ballistic. You just hit everything with the same energy all the time.
Right.
You start shot out of a cannon.
Doesn't
the middle,
stop.
You're being shot out
yes.
of a cannon. The end, you're shot out of a cannon. That's not
Fosse.
Exactly. So we want the nuances. We want the humor, the irony, the grace, the elegance. The dynamics when it's called for, we want you to see the difference of dynamics between, you know, what's high energy and what's more subtle and seductive and humorous. And we want to bring that back. And that's, I think, his intention is to bring that back in the way Bob Fosse intended it.
And that's one of those things that made Bob Fosse so unique, too.
Exactly. That's what you could take some of his movements. Do it without the slight body adjustments. You could do a jump in the air with one leg in what we call a passe. So that's like the leg you jump off of is straight. The leg that comes up will bend at the knee and say your toe comes up to your straight leg knee. Lots of people have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people haven't done that. At the same time, you twist your body toward your leg faces the other way, and you lean back. Most people don't do that. Or you could bring your one leg up the side of your standing leg at the same time you do back bumps with your hip as fast as you can. People don't do that. It's hard to do.
The juxtaposition of the rhythm, too.
Right. We're just used to seeing maybe the leg come up the leg and step out, but not with that hip pulsing. It's really hard to do, and if you're not careful, even the best professional dancer will forget to do it because the body just wants to go in the way that's easy.
Or maybe it's been trained originally.
Right,
or
so you have to be always mindful of what you're doing. It's little things like that that make him different from other choreographers and just doing that same movement. They do that movement in ballet. They do it in modern, but they don't do it with that hip thing or a lean back or,
And we've talked about in the past the idea that a lot of it did come from his limitations. The way his body's him being slightly turned in. He never had the turnout.
He was slightly bow-legged. He had round shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also his influence from Gwen Burdon, who was assistant to Jack Cole. Both Jack and Gwen were masters in Bharatanatyam, a form of Indian dance that I think really influenced Bob's work. When Gwen started to work with him, I think she brought a little bit of that flexed hand, and you know how the classic iconic two fingers on the brim and the other fingers splayed. Mm-hmm. That's very Indian. And I think it was her that kind of, you know, might have said, well, Bob, what about doing like, what, add that to it, or sit in the hip? There's a lot of sitting in the hip in East Indian dance. And I think that was a big influence on Bob when she started to work with him. That's my opinion of how it all evolved.
Yeah.
I have to check that out with his daughter, Nicole.
Yeah.
I'll have to confirm that.
Is she producing, or this is just all by permission?
This is by permission and support of Nicole.
How involved is she with this?
She's not been coming in because it's so it's quite a distance from where she is, but she does send a very close confidant in to watch and see what we're doing. And Wayne is in touch with her to say, hey, I want to do this with this number, is that okay? And she'll like, yeah, whatever you want to do.
Did this idea to bring it back come from Wayne? Did he approach someone and say, this is what I want to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He, like me, had a very positive experience in our careers with Bob. And I think, you know, like Bob wanted to pay homage to Fred Astaire, Wayne wants to pay homage to Bob Fosse. Because he really... he changed the direction of my life as a dancer. I'm sure he influenced Wayne's. And, you know, when you see what has been done with his work, that's one of the reasons that Nicole, his daughter with Gwen Verdon, started the Fosse Verdon Legacy.
Right.
And now
right.
they will train people and gather the people who worked with them to teach so that it's the integrity is maintained. So that's what we hope to do with this version of Dansen. I have to say, it's so exciting. I was knocked out when I saw this new version of this thing that was originally cut. I was just kind of like, how is he ever going to do this? And the way he described, and he did it.
Mm.
It's very exciting.
That's so exciting.
I can't wait.
So there are numbers in there that were like a number called Percussion, Joint Endeavor, Benny's Number. Can you talk about some of these numbers, and are they in the... How much can you talk about even the revival? As far as how do you bring these back?
Okay, well, I can tell you Joint Endeavors will be in there, probably not in its entirety. That's in the second act, and that's something we have not gotten to yet. What was the other one you mentioned?
Percussion.
The percussion, yes. Yeah. I think that was probably Bob's favorite instruments. And there's like four sections to it. They're all very different, but they're all connected. And they all play with rhythm, as does Dancin' Man. And he was a master at rhythms. So there's a section with thigh slaps and what they call ham boning in Dancin' Man.
Right. Yes. I remember that from Fosse.
Yes. And he's just a master of that. And he was also great with having a hand in lighting, costumes, music. I mean, I think if you want to be a good director and get exactly what you want, you have to understand all the other realms of the theater. So he was really able to communicate with the music director, the costume designer. He knew what he wanted, and he knew how to communicate it. And he even had his own, you know, design ideas. Percussion deals with percussion instruments that can vary in tone. And the last one, I think, is his percussion 4, also known as Varese, because that's where the music is from. I think it deals with him as an aging dancer. That kind of is sort of maybe him being in a rehearsal studio, testing out what he can still do. I think Wayne's take on it was a man in turmoil and struggle. They both make perfect sense to me.
So you had one interpretation in your mind
From what I remember hearing in rehearsals and hearing Charles originally, Ward first did it originally, I had heard that it was him, because very often that's how he would work. Go into a studio with a trunk full of props and then just start taking out props and doing something with it and seeing what it looked like. And then maybe he'd call Gwen in to help him out, or he'd call Nicole in to help him out. If it was getting close to a show, he might ask like two or three dancers or four dancers to come in and try things out on them. It was my impression that he was in a studio by himself, seeing what he could do, bringing out different props and things like that. And Wayne's interpretation was that it was a man in struggle. And both are very fitting, and both could have come from Fosse at different times.
Yes.
Because when people started to leave the show and someone comes in to replace them, they might have different strengths, because it's a piece of virtuosity. It's showing, expressing the range of a human body as far as jumps and turns and leaps and things like that. And different dancers have different strengths.
Right.
So he was not opposed to changing that little, if somebody didn't do a triple attitude turn very well, he'd change it into something they did spectacularly. Mm. So he wasn't, you know, he would change things as needed. And the way that Wayne now has constructed that piece conveys that sense of struggle and maybe rage and desire to get out and frustration. And he does it with his set and with other things, other slight changes.
Mm-hmm.
Not big ones, nothing original, not anything that Fosse hasn't already done within that piece. He just maybe takes a little more time, lets the dancer take a little more time doing it.
Is there anything to do with more relevance today that Wayne brought into it, or not necessarily?
The relevance level would be the same, but your level of understanding what's happening will be much more clear now.
Mm. Elaborate.
That's all I can say.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, so talk to me about, you know, your role. So again, you know, Wayne originally reached out to you. The fact that you were both part of the original, how was your role? How was it working with Wayne? How was that dynamic?
Great, because we're both on the same page about what we want to, how we want to portray Bob's work.
Okay.
What he wanted is for me to recreate the original choreography. And I had kind of an interesting journey. I auditioned, maybe five times. I was hired as a principal. And about 2 weeks later, he asked me if I would be a swing.
This is for dancing.
This is for the original dancing.
Original dancing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
He said he wanted to keep it very intimate, and he thinks he hired too many people, but he wanted to be sure he had all the best dancers. So he asked myself and another male dancer if he would swing.
Was that Bill Whitener?
No.
It wasn't
Bill.
No. Because Bill was in it too,
wasn't he? Bill was in it too.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's get
back
to that.
I got that. Give
it. Okay.
Yes.
Because that's
Sorry.
An interesting story as well.
Yeah.
And I said no, and okay. I said no for 4 days. And each time I said no, he'd say, well, why don't you just take the day off and think about it some more?
Okay.
So the fourth day I came in, and that's a long story but of how I decided, but I said, okay, I'll do it. I think it was after I saw my sketches. I had never seen sketches of me, costume sketches of me for a costume.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's my Sing Sing dress?
Wow.
Oh, I have got to wear that.
I love that.
So I was like, yeah, okay, I'll stay. But I had to learn the roles of eight women.
Right.
What they didn't realize is how hard the show was on the cast, how physically hard it was. I wound up being on all the time, and I would go in for men because there was only one male swing, one female swing. I would go on for men who I'd not been watching their role or their track or anything. And sometimes I would be three different people in the same number. I would just go off and then come out of a different wing as a different person and then go off again and come back on as the third
person.
It was crazy.
The life of a swing.
Okay.
Right.
So then at the first opportunity, and this is where Bob was so gracious, when someone was leaving to do the national tour, he put me into her role.
Okay.
And so I became a principal again. Okay. God. Bill Whitener, we were in Boston. The man who was in it originally broke his ankle.
We should say really quickly, William Whitener...
Former artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet. Yes. Joffrey Ballet dancer, Twyla Tharp dancer, who she set many of her most famous pieces on him.
Right.
He was a phenomenal, phenomenal dancer.
Worked with Jerome Robbins.
Yep. Yes, yep. On with Jerome Robbins, mm-hmm. Broadway.
Right.
He was
right.
assisted him on that. Mm-hmm. So they were like in a panic because we were in Boston in the middle of that snowstorm.
Right.
And Annie said, well, I have a friend. Maybe he's not doing anything. So she called Bill, and they grew up together, Ann Reinking, who was, one of Bob's proteges, yeah. and longtime girlfriend. And he had like 6 months before he joined Twyla Tharp again. He goes, yeah, I guess I could do it. So he flew into Boston and had to learn the whole show like in 2 days. And he opened with us on Broadway as a swing. So it was just the two of us that had to carry the whole show. And then of course, after opening night, everybody started dropping like flies.
Yep.
You know, whatever. They could have a broken leg and they would get on because they wanted to be on opening night on Broadway. And they realized they had to hire more swings. So they did. So that's... that was my journey, and that's how Bill came into the picture, and I've been friends with Bill ever since.
Yeah.
We had that bond.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So because you were a swing, did Wayne depend on you to remember more than
I think that's why he called, because he knew that as a swing, I had to know everybody's part.
Right.
There might have been a dance captain who knew everybody's part. I don't know what put my name in his head. 2 years before that, I had seen him in New York at there's an organization called Dancers Over 40.
Yep.
And they do things to support the older dancer. And they were celebrating the 40th anniversary of the opening of Broadway, the opening of Dancing on Broadway. And so I went up, and Wayne was there, and most of the cast was there. And maybe my name was kind of in the forefront of his thoughts because of that. I don't know. But he knew that having swung that show that I would have known or had notes and stuff like that. So, you know, when he told me what he needed and I told him what I could provide, it just was a good fit. So... we did it, and he's hysterical to work with and just has some great ideas. If you are a diehard Fosse fan and you really remember the show from 45 years ago now, 43, something like that,
78, right.
You might be a purist and you might not appreciate some of the changes, but I feel like you've got to change, and it's not changing the choreography. Mm-hmm. There's not one bit of choreography in that show that is not Bob Fosse's.
Right.
It may have been rearranged in a different order, to original music, but everything is his, and it's what he has done with that. Just, you know, it just blows my mind as we're sitting there thinking, you know, he would say, well, that looks it's just too linear. What if we, you know, people face this direction or do this pattern, and like that, it just gave it a new life. It just gave it a lift and a little pizzazz, without really changing anything that he would have done. And
he might have thought that same way.
That is exactly what I was going to say.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like if he was still alive today, that he would have done the same thing. Because I've seen, from what we did in Sweet Charity on Broadway, in The Frug, for example, the way we did those little fists and pulled the fist down, in the movie, he does that much differently. our heads were going up and down. In the head, they were in the movie. They were going back and forth.
Right.
Uh-huh. Our arms and hands were like together in front of us. In the movie, they were out to the sides of their faces, and you know, doing so, it was different. I really feel if he were alive, that he might have said, "I think I want to do dancing, and I'd like to do it over again." And mm-hmm. these are the changes I would make. Even there's a vocal number in there, "Here You Come Again," that was originally written by Dolly Parton,
yes.
and she released it. Wayne has reworked that with a little different dialogue, and it's hysterically funny. It's the harmonies and the musical arrangements are so Broadway musical theater-ish. It's really delightful. It's very funny, and it touches on a relevant subject of today about how we view men and women. And I think that's the other thing that I really like about this show is when you see the diversity of the cast,
yeah.
it's not what you would expect. It's much different than it was in 78. And, you know, I it makes me think about other young dancers and performers who mm-hmm. are thinking about pursuing this as a career, to not give up because of who you are or how you identify. Mm-hmm. We are opening up.
Topics of gender.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. We are opening up, and our show reflects that. And I think it'll be a breath of fresh air. And if this is what you want to do and you want to be a performer, pursue it. Don't let anything stand in your way. Because you have a greater chance of succeeding now than ever. And even if you don't succeed, the pursuing of it will take you in a different direction, and that could be where you were meant to be. And if you've never started to pursue it to begin with, you may not have ended up where you belonged. I went to school with people who said their teachers humiliated them in class because they were overweight or something like that, and they were phenomenal dancers. And it's like, okay, so maybe at that time there wasn't a company for you, but maybe since you kept pursuing it as a performer, you might have veered off in this direction and opened your own company that can employ body shapes and genders of anyone you want.
Who you are.
Yeah. Be who you are in this business. I think there's a place.
There's a place.
Yeah.
We're going to take our last break, and we will be right back with Christine Kobe-Jakes. And welcome back to Show People with my guest, Christine Kobe-Jakes. I'm also joined by Fiona and Una today. Thanks again for being here.
We're loving being here. I'm enjoying the conversation, and I think I picked up a new term about swing for dancer, meaning that you shifted between all the different roles, and what a nightmare that has to be for everyone.
It definitely keeps you on your toes. I've been a swing before. And my husband's been a swing before. It's not boring.
Mm-mm. Because you never know what to expect.
Yep.
Yeah,
you never know what to expect.
I only knew the term understudy before, and those mm-hmm. were so often very focused roles rather than shifting through the
whole
cast.
That's a good distinction. It's usually used for like a role. In dancing, in the 78 version and our version, everyone is a principal. So, and swing is just a real short, quick term for, I think the official term in Equity is offstage swing or offstage alternate.
Dance alternate? Or I think it was called a dance alternate were in dancing or something.
It was just swing or right. alternate, and now it's offstage, and that indicates that that's what they do. But there are principals within the show who perform every night that are covers for another role. So that's how they make the distinction between an offstage and an onstage swing. Because there's some, you know, solo parts that would go to somebody in the cast who's performing nightly, as opposed to somebody who is offstage waiting to go on for somebody.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Difference. Huh.
Yeah. So many terms.
So many terms. So when are you going? Are you going back to New York? What's the next step for you?
I don't know. I think my next step may be going out to San Diego. They're going to preview at the Old Globe.
Right.
And that's kind of a historical theater modeled after the Old Globe in London.
That's right. And a lot of shows get their start there.
A lot of Broadway shows have gotten their start there. And the list is long, and cast members have and writers and have won Tonys for these, for their part in these shows. They originally presented Shakespeare, and now they've kind of expanded.
Yes.
You know, they still present Shakespeare. And I think that will preview in April to May.
April and May, yeah.
Of 22. They're still not certain of the opening on Broadway.
Right.
So if I come back, it will probably be at the Old Globe for previews, because the next phase, when they start rehearsals again in 22, will be to formulate and learn the second act.
Oh,
so all the material, okay. There's just a few numbers that I didn't teach them, but it's not like they couldn't be taught by somebody else, because they don't really require the Fosse nuances and style.
Yes.
They're very, one is kind of a military brass band from Sweet Charity. So that's very upright, you know, military I really can't think of the
presentation?
Word.
Presentation? Body language?
It's that body stance of how the military is so upright, and they're in military uniforms, and it's all kind of ballet jazz movements, but not the classic Fosse style with the hand, you know, the splayed fingers and the, you know.
Right.
It's not that. And it's just kind of, everything is built into the choreography, so it doesn't rely so much on Fosse's classic style.
Mm.
So it could be taught and set without me, if that's, you know, because that's kind of what I was there for as well, to keep people on track with that. So I don't know if I'll go back for that phase,
okay.
But probably the preview phase.
Did you know when you were a part of Danson, the 1978 original production of Danson, did you ever imagine that in 2021 you would be teaching Bob Fosse?
No. Not for a reopening, not for a revival of it. Uh-huh. I've taught it over the years since then. I went out on tour with Fosse, so I did it then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then I started teaching master classes. So I've stayed in touch with a lot of the material. But to be going up and revisit some numbers that I don't teach in master classes, because they require partners and you don't always have that in a master class. Reviving the show? No. Mm-hmm. I would never, that thought never crossed my mind.
But was there an idea back then that this was special? That this person you were working with is special? His legacy will live on?
I think we knew how special he was at the time. I'm not so sure we knew how special Danson was at the time.
Uh-huh.
Danson had... They had tried to revive Danson two times before. In the past 10, 15 years.
I didn't know that.
And they both fell through.
Okay.
I think they just didn't... I'm not sure for what reason, so I really can't even speculate.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Wayne that came with a plot line and a
concept,
a
an
concept,
art, some
a
sort
layout of,
yeah, of
how this
yeah.
would all go and what would go in, out of this number and into the next. And then and as the producer said, everything Wayne told me he would do, he has done. So I think Wayne is somebody who can get things up and moving and get them going. And he just needed the support, and that was Joey Parnes, the producer, and also the producer and the all the people out at the Globe. They have put their support behind this, and they came in to see. We had four presentations at the end of our last week, and they were wowed. They just were knocked out by what they saw. I am so excited for this thing to get onto Broadway. I think it's what... It'll be refreshing to see Fosse. You'll see numbers of his you probably don't even know he did. It was very early on in his career. Other numbers that he's well known for and haven't been seen for a while. If you really know Fossey and his work, you'll appreciate it. You'll know where, when he introduces all these different numbers, you'll know where they come from, what movie or show. If you don't really even have a clue about Fossey, you are just going to be thoroughly entertained and delighted.
Well, gosh, introduced to a new generation, too, which is
exactly
also kind of neat, too.
Yeah.
What did you learn from this experience, going back and setting this with Wayne? What did you learn?
Whoa. Well, I learned how valuable my experience with Fossey was. He gave me an opportunity. I had done no Broadway before. He hired me and gave me an opportunity to work in that area, hone my performance quality, approach dance in a completely different way as an actor rather than a dancer, to have an image behind every step I did. It's almost like doing a monologue or singing a song. You need to have a reason why you're singing. What's the who, why, what, where, when of that song or monologue or dance? With him, it was literally every step has an image, which just imbues that step with something completely different and conveys to the audience all the qualities of Fosse that you know, and keeps it from just being a recital dance. I think ballerinas should do this. I think every dancer, modern, ballet, jazz, contemporary, should study acting. I think every actor should study dancing. Every singer should study dance. All of the, even artists, musicians, should take classes in another phase of art. Something outside their comfort zone.
Yes.
It will
yes.
just fill and color what you normally do. I think that's so important. Wayne helped me get back in touch with that.
Oh, good.
And I think now when I go back to teach Fosse's work, I'll do it kind of with a renewed energy and a renewed purpose. And to see the dancers that I worked with handle this material is so inspiring. And how a lot of them weren't born when Fosse was alive, but they still have this reverence for the work they're doing.
Right.
I just was so amazed. Like I said, they don't look like your classic Fosse dancer. They're not all long-legged and tall. And Bob was also known for hiring a varied cast.
Okay.
You know,
well, the individual was so important to him.
You just hit the nail on the head, and this is what Wayne wants to stress.
Okay.
You should all do Fosse as he intended. You should have the classic teacup hand, and all that has to be in place. But other than that, he wants to see the individual and their personality do it the way they do it within the paradigm of Fosse's style. And that's what he had in 78. We were all different. There was little Jill Cook, and there was statuesque Sandel Bergman from Kansas, by the way.
Yes,
you know, there were a couple of male dancers that looked like models and Adonis, and then there were a couple of male dancers that were very short, and someone had lost, you know, was bald, and somebody else was a little more stocky. He liked a variety. You just had to exude something particular that he felt communicated what his work and how he wanted it done. Wayne has done that same thing. And when you see these dancers evolve as they have and take on that persona, their carriage outside rehearsal is completely different than when they, you know, they don't walk in like a bunch of New York City ballet dancers, you know, with head up in the air and walking, you know, like a duck. They just kind of walk in like, you know, regular people, and then they start to dance or act or sing, and it's like, oh, pardon me. You know, oh, let me make room for you. It's just, oh, it's, inspiring.
It is. And I remember Bob Fosse, he talked about the idea that he would first watch, you know, the body. I think he said that he wouldn't even sometimes look at the face. He wanted to see what the body was doing. And then he would have you sing, because that was probably more vulnerable, because then he would get to see you a little bit more. And that was so important to him when we're talking about the individual. Like, you would need to see, which is probably why everybody was so varied in the cast, is because they needed to see a certain more from the individual, or
the focus was on having the best dancer he could have.
Right.
He understands that dancers are not always comfortable singing. Right. So it's let them get comfortable with me in this audition with them dancing. Then we can hear them sing. And he would always say, even once we were hired for Sweet Charity, we still had to audition to cover the lead roles. And his notice to us was, listen, don't do all those singer moves with you, like your hand coming up and down, and just don't move around a lot. Just stand, plant your feet, and sing. Mm. And that would be the best indication to him as to whether or not you could hold a stage. Mm. And if he didn't look at your face, it's because when you were dancing, your face shouldn't be doing anything.
Right.
When you're singing, your face shouldn't be doing anything. It should only reflect the step that you're doing or the line that you're singing. It should be free to take on the expression of your emotion, not a predetermined expression.
Mm. We only have a minute left with you. In a few words, your first impression of Bob Fosse when you met him.
Well, he's so adorable. But I have to say, when I first saw him for real in person, I was intimidated. And by the time we got to the second cut, I sort of felt like he was in my corner.
Hmm.
He truly is rooting for everyone who is auditioning for him. Mm.